And we continue with the interview that we did back in 1989 with the late Arthur Ashe, professional tennis legend and also the author of a book called Hard Road to Glory. I asked Ashe to talk about Volume 1 of this book, where it chronicles blacks in sports from 1619 to 1918.
Well, that was by far the hardest of the three volumes to research and to write. I didn't really know where to start, but I really did want to begin with whatever I could come up with of a sporting nature that either slaves or Africans, before they were slaves or indentured servants over here, had participated in. And I finally found out some things through what were called travel diaries of Europeans who took trips to the west coast of Africa, and also some anthropological research. And I was able to do that. But of course, Volume 1 culminates with basically two sports that really stuck out. One was boxing and the other was horse racing. And I was just absolutely flabbergasted and surprised to learn that black jockeys almost completely dominated horse racing in the late 19th century.
And yet they were banned a little bit later on, were they not?
Yes. What happened was that in around 1890, the Jockey Club was formed, and one of its duties was to relicense jockeys every once in a while. And because blacks were so good, and they were making quite a bit of money, and this was the post-Reconstruction era when the U.S. was basically resegregating itself, every time each black jockey's license came up for renewal, it was turned down. These black jockeys went from an almost complete dominance. We're talking about a dominance that is even more pronounced than, say, the black participation in the NBA today, if you can believe that. As an example, when the first Kentucky Derby was run in 1875, 15 horses went to the post in that first run for the Roses. And of those 15 horses, 14 of the jockeys were black. But the point is made that due to the relicensing shenanigans of the Jockey Club, by 1911, there were no black jockeys left. They were all gone.
What other athletes stood out during that period in your research?
Isaac Murphy, whom I thought was the greatest black athlete, at least of the 19th century. He was a jockey who, from every account I could possibly find in foreign newspapers, the racing journals of the day, U.S. newspapers, from trainers, from owners, they said he was a rider that it had no peer, and they had never seen anybody like that on a horse. I mean, he just seemed almost part of the horse. And plus, he was a very nice guy. I easily thought, just based on what I'd seen and read about the other sports, that he was the most accomplished black athlete of the 19th century, and possibly, with the exception of John L. Sullivan, you know, the last bare-knuckle world heavyweight champion, with the exception of John L. Sullivan, Isaac Murphy may very well have been the greatest American athlete of the last century.
Another athlete that you profiled during that time was the first black athlete to win an Olympic medal in 1904.
Yes, that's George Poge in St. Louis. As the Olympics were staged there as part of the World's Fair, they are very interesting. Point you bring out about the first track athletes. Today, obviously, blacks are known as sprinters and jumpers, but I would say the first whole generation of black track stars were distance men. They were quarter milers and half milers. It wasn't until 1910, 1912 that Howard Porter Drew was acclaimed the first black man to be given the title World's Fastest Human.
Well, volume number two was the one that interested me the most, and I guess it was because, I didn't live during particularly that time, but it was the one that interested me the most, and it chronicled the period between the two world wars in which you've already alluded to, the golden age of white sports, but Jim Crow was the law of the land because segregation affected sports arenas, black college sports leagues, the United Golfers Association, Negro Pro Leagues, and everything. That period of time must have been one of frustration as blacks began to emerge in athleticism.
It really was one of frustration. Of course, it was one of frustration for everybody, all Americans, partially because of the Depression of the 30s. But as you say, most of the groundwork for the success of the black athlete after World War II was laid in this era between the two world wars. For instance, the old Negro leagues that are now starting to get some publicity from Cooperstown. They were begun in 1920. The NFL that we know today, the NFL was begun around 1920, and it initially had black coaches and players involved. Basketball, the Harlem Globetrotters, and the New York Renaissance, but of course the Harlem Globetrotters being very famous, they were formed in the 1920s. But the fact remains that none of these organizations were allowed to participate in the official white-run and white-operated leagues, and so most of America never got to find out how good these other athletes really were.
What was the view of the Harlem Globetrotters? Because if you take a look at the Negro baseball leagues, they were certainly self-contained. But the Harlem Globetrotters was kind of like a bridge, was it not?
Yes, it was. The Harlem Globetrotters were actually based out of Chicago, strangely enough, although everybody who didn't know any better thought they came from New York. But they were given the name Harlem Globetrotters because by this time, blacks had begun to take over this formerly Dutch section of New York City, known as Harlem. And the owner figured that he would have more success if he could convince people that this was a New York team, although it was Chicago-based and bred all the way. And they were very, very good. And even though they are now known for clowning and entertaining basketball, up until 1948 or so, they were a very serious and very good basketball team.
Mm-hmm. How were they looked upon by other black athletes?
Well, they were looked upon as being exceptionally good. You also have to remember that the rules for basketball were different then. For instance, there was a jump ball after every basket. You didn't have the three-second rule. You didn't have what was known as today, for instance, you have the common phrase fast break to describe how some teams take advantage of a weak defense. But for instance, the fast break was first known as the racehorse maneuver. And it was really partially brought to light because of fast black athletes who like to play a different brand of basketball. And that's what you found when you watched the Harlem Globetrotters when the rules were changed and the New York Renaissance. Maybe one of the best professional teams ever.
That period between the two world wars certainly didn't bring to the forefront the accomplishments and certainly what I would consider three great black heroes, Jesse Owens, Joe Louis, and Jackie Robinson.
Yes, well, Jesse and Joe came about their fame within a two-year period. Jesse, of course, well, almost 3 years, because in May of 1935, one afternoon in a dual meet between Ohio State, where he attended, and Michigan, I think it was, he set three world records and broke a fourth. Tied a fourth. And then, of course, the next year, 1936, he won four gold medals at the Olympics. And now, 2 years later, you had the second bout between Joe Louis and Max Schmeling, who had defeated him in 1936. And this Joe Louis-Max Schmeling bout was one of the most expected events in U.S. history, period. You literally had the entire nation waiting to see what would happen, because this was the first time that a black athlete, Joe Louis, was widely respected and in some cases even loved by all of America, not just black America. And that was a psychological breakthrough for us.
Mm-hmm. That period in Volume 3 that you chronicle, 1946 to present, how would you state that?
Well, it's divided into very distinct periods. As I mentioned earlier, the 1950s produced athletes who were very, very different from the Michael Jordans and the Roger Craigs of today, in the sense that black athletes were very apprehensive. They were in a frame of mind of being thankful that the rules had been changed enough to allow them to participate. So they weren't going to rock the boat. They were going to do exactly what they were told and weren't going to make any fuss, and they were just going to try to do the best job they could. And, of course, in the 1960s, two things happened to change all that. One, it was the Black Social Revolution, which culminated in the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 65, and television, for the first time, grabbed on to sports and has not let go since. And that completely changed the way America and the rest of the world viewed the black athlete, because now he was on TV and he was shining. Whereas you never saw, or very seldom saw, Jackie Robinson do his thing first of all, because there were very few television sets in 1947 when he started. And when he ended in the mid-50s, there were more TV sets, but the average number of TV sets was probably about one per block. So he just didn't have the immediate impact of, say, someone who had, like a Jim Brown, for instance, or a Wilt Chamberlain did in the 1960s. And, of course, in the 1970s, things changed because there was free agentry. Kurt Flood had pressed his case all the way to the Supreme Court, the reserve clause, that is, in baseball. He lost, but his efforts paved the way for free agency in the early 70s. And with the quantum leap in salaries came a host of new problems. And the new problems were difficulties working with coaches. Players made a lot of money and went broke in a very short period of time. And, of course, the drug problem started then.
Arthur, having been a part of the past as far as athletic growth for black athletes and having researched it as thoroughly as you have, you must probably have looked toward the future and maybe even crystal balled a little bit about what's going to happen to black athletes in the future. Do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Yes, two specific things. One is that I don't believe that increasing opportunities in other occupations and vocations will necessarily decrease the participation by blacks in sports. I think it's a deeply embedded part of the black American culture, and we will continue to do well. The second point is an even sadder one for me, and that is that, unfortunately, I do believe now that there have been literally thousands and thousands of young white athletes and white coaches at the high school and junior high level and public parks level who have been brainwashed into thinking that black athletes are so good at certain positions in certain sports that they don't even care to compete anymore. As an example, if, say, some 13-year-old white sprinter has the notion of trying to make the U.S. Olympic team as a sprinter, he is probably being told, hey, forget it. Black athletes are too fast. Don't even try it. And we see that happening more and more, and I think that's sad.
Well, I tell you, we haven't even begun to scratch this surface, but where would blacks be today overall as a group if it had not been for the successes and the accomplishments of black athletes?
Well, I think if you didn't put entertainers in that group, we would not have very many people who we could point to and say they are the very best at something, because we had just been allowed to compete under the same set of rules with everybody in just about any endeavor. That's only happened recently, so I think black America wouldn't feel quite as good about itself if we had not had the success we did have in athletics.
I hope you enjoyed the interview that we did back in 1989 with the late Arthur Ashe. Not only was an outstanding tennis player, that was certainly proven as he became the first African American to win the U.S. Open and Wimbledon, but he also was an outstanding human being. He did an awful lot for African Americans and for the sport that he loved, but he was also, as I said, a first-class gentleman. The U.S. Open renamed their facility Arthur Ashe Stadium for him in 1997. We'll take a quick break, come back, and continue with more of You and America's Sports Talk Show.